It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to another Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast on the first double game day of the tournament. Bangladesh beat Afghanistan by 6 wickets this morning before South Africa tore up the record books against Sri Lanka. I'm Cassia Whitney and I'm here with Jim Wallace to discuss the South Africa match. A little bit later on, Ben Gardner will be speaking to Tawad Qureshi about the Bangladesh-Afghanistan game. But first, Jim, I'm going to come at you with some stats from that incredible match in Delhi, which South Africa won by 102 runs. South Africa posted the highest ever score in a World Cup, so that's 428 for five. Quinton de Kock, Rassie van der Dussen and Aidan Markram all scored centuries. So that's the first time three batters have scored hundreds in the same World Cup innings. And Aidan Markram hit the fastest ever World Cup century off 49 balls, beating Kevin O'Brien's record from when Ireland beat England in Bengaluru in 2011. And don't we all remember that so well? Jim, what was your moment of the match from all those incredible records?
Yeah, mine is going to be, it was an incredible game. It was those, I think I texted you just before saying, how long has this game been going on for? I guess there were so many boundaries, they had to keep fetching the ball and it was felt like it was just going on for hours longer than a normal match. But Markham's innings was pretty amazing. And some of the shots were, they were really classy. He played that sort of check drive, a bit like Harry Brook, where he holds the pose. He played some audacious ramps. He played some lovely straight drives down the ground, and I was really pleased for him because he's had a bit of a dry patch, and then he's hit this sort of rich vein of form right at the right time. So my moment of the match is more sound. The sound of his bat was absolutely insane. It was like a cannon or something. It sounded really satisfying. Like a cannon in a bubble wrap factory or something like that. But there was a real crunch every time, even when he was just crunching a single out to the boundary. There was a real sort of deep, satisfying whip crack sound of his bat. So yeah, I guess all the other players would be wanting to know what he was using. But it was an amazing innings and sort of put de Kock and van der Dussen in the shade a little bit. But they played great as well.
Yeah, you mentioned that he's hit a real rich vein of form this year. This is his third ODI century since March. And in the previous 5 years of his ODI career, he hadn't scored a single century. He could be such a key player for South Africa in this tournament. It's such an exciting batting lineup when you look it up and down, and it feel like it really clicked into gear today. I feel like South Africa were kind of like the side most of all who came into this tournament thinking it's either going to be boom or bust, but it showed today that when they really put it together, they're going to be absolutely box office.
Absolutely, yeah. They've got incredible bowlers in the likes of Rabada and Ngidi and Jansen look really good today. Their top six is just, on paper, if it's firing, and it is firing, it has been recently against Australia too. Klaassen coming in at, it always makes me sound posh when I say Klaassen, I'm going to call him Heinrich Klaassen, comes in at, what does he come in at, six?
Well, he came in at five today, but...
Five, and then Miller, and then, it's Bavuma. I saw a tweet, I think it was Cameron Ponsonby, who's an erstwhile member of this parish. He did it the other day as well, but he sort of screen grabbed the scorecard and said, what's up, Temba, because everyone else around, Temba Bavuma got 8 runs off 5 balls. And then everyone else is getting a ton, basically. And he did it the other day with what's his chops, Will Young, who missed out again. So, it's been very batting heavy, hasn't it? The start of the tournament, I guess. But your moment was a bowling moment, at least, Katia.
Yeah, my moment was a bowling moment from South Africa. But before we get on to that, I just want to have a quick word for the Sri Lanka bowlers, because they had a pretty torrid time today. They're without Wanindu Hasaranga, who won't be with them for the whole tournament. And they were also without Mahesh Teekshana today, two of their best spinners against the side who have scored their runs quicker than any other in ODIs this year. And they didn't bowl particularly well, it's got to be said. But I felt particularly bad for Mateesha Pasirana, who had a bit of a mare, to be honest. At one point, he was taken for 26 runs off one over when Markram teed off. And incidentally, it's only the second time in World Cup history where three bowlers conceded more than 80 runs in the same innings, with Pasirana, Dinis Welalaje and Kusun Rajitha. They had tough days. Looked pretty desolate sometimes on the field for Sri Lanka.
Yeah, it was carnage, really, wasn't it? I guess when someone like Markram is in that kind of mood as well, it really doesn't matter what's coming down. But yeah, it looked a little bit one-dimensional, and particularly it looked quite flat towards the end. I'm just looking down here at the economy rates and there's some eye-watering numbers. So, it's a small pitch, right, at Delhi's. And Markram, I just saw just after the match, just saying it was rapid outfield and just a really good wicket. So what was it, 700 and something runs? You reeled it off at the start. I mean, it was tough going for the bowlers, I think, today. Even Jansen, who looked good, and Ngidi and Rabada, you know, they still, I guess we'll come on to Sri Lanka, but I mean, they had a good crack at it, really, and they tailed off a little bit with the wickets, but they were still smart in fours and sixes.
Jansen also he conceded quite a few runs today. I think it was 92. It was definitely over 90. But my moment of the match was actually his ball to get Kusil Pereira out. It was a brilliant ball. He got both Sri Lanka openers today, bowled them both middle peg, cutting back in between bat and pad, bails everywhere. Absolutely beautiful. He's such an important player to this South Africa side because he came in and he whacked some ridiculous sixes as well, some of the biggest of the match. And then he comes in and bowls like that. And they've got quite a dearth of all-rounders. You mentioned all that power in the batting lineup and the power in the bowling lineup as well. But apart from Jansen, they've got Fekla Kweyo, who wasn't even meant to be in the squad until they had a couple of injuries with Norkia and with Sisanda Magala. How important is Jansen for them, do you think?
I think he really is. I think he'll have... We saw a glimpse of it today. I think he'll have one of those matches where he blows away a top order. He's got that, you know, that pitch up, that swing, that the angle. He's all limbs, lissom limbs. And when he's in full flight, yeah, he's really exciting to watch. I remember watching him in the Test series a few years ago when they came to England and thinking, he sort of reminds me of Alan Mullally, which is not the greatest of compliments, but he's like a sort of Alan Mullally on acid. He's like Alan Mullally because, you know, there's something about watching a sort of scrawny left arm seamer steaming in that is quite appealing. But yeah, he's batting as well, some of those shots, pretty ridiculous. So it's those long levers, I guess, isn't it? But yeah, in full flight, he's special. And I think he will have one of those games. Maybe hopefully it's not against England where he blows away a top order because he's pitch up at the stumps.
Yeah, I think Ian Bishop described him today as tall, gangly and ungainly. The other thing I thought was interesting from the match was that South Africa came in with one spinner or one full-time spinner. And that comes back to the kind of all-rounder question. They didn't actually use... they only used five bowlers today, which I thought was also interesting, rather than going through with Aidan Markram's part-time spin. If they can keep going through those kind of five bowlers without having to play Tabrez Shamsi as well and perhaps only play three seamers or break up the batting lineup a bit, that could really help them, couldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a long old tournament, and if you can keep miles in people's legs, then that is all the better. I mean, again, we've mentioned it again, but it was so brutal for the bowlers out there. So you can, if you go through three, four, five games like that, then, you know, bowlers are going to be in the red zone, as they call it. So I guess if you can afford to and have the luxury of being able to keep a few back in the hutch and keep them for the key games, then that could come into play later in the tournament too.
And just on Sri Lanka again, they gave it such a good go in the chase, as you said earlier. Kusil Mendes came in and smashed a half century off 25 balls, and at one point Aidan Markram's about half an hour old record looked slightly under threat.
And his opening partner had none of the 50 partnership as well. That was good. That was like club cricket style. Yeah, he was just absolutely boshing it, and the other guy couldn't get a bat. Couldn't get down either end, really.
Yeah. And then Charith Asalanka also scored 79 off 65. They're eventually bowled out for 326. It was the most runs ever scored in a World Cup match. They gave it such a good go. And it's positive signs for Sri Lanka. When Themba Bavuma came off the field, he didn't look exactly thrilled, as you would have thought, having posted over 400 and got your first win on the board. What did you make of their batting performance?
I thought, I was really impressed. And I thought it was a shame, actually, because I thought if they had maybe one or two more wickets in the hutch, at one point, they were when they were on 303, the sides were both on 303 at the same time. I saw the wiggly worm thing and they were matched, but obviously South Africa were for three wickets and I think Sri Lanka were for eight, were eight down by then. So if they'd maybe kept a few in the hutch, then yeah, I mean, they could have given it a real good go. They were still, you know, clearing the ropes right at the end. Those three guys who didn't go on and get a massive score, but got sort of 70s in pretty quick time.
Just lastly on Sri Lanka, Jim, they've got Pakistan next Tuesday. That's their next match. Pakistan obviously had a little bit of a scare against the Netherlands yesterday, but went on to win that match comfortably. What do you think their chances are against them?
I think they've got a good chance. If they turn up like they sort of did for patches of today, then they've obviously got a gun batting lineup, and they can give anyone a scare. As you said, Netherlands gave Pakistan a scare again, but then it's, you know, it's Pakistan in World Cups. If they turn up and Shaheen or whatever blows away Sri Lanka's top order, then it could be curtains. But it could be one of these short matches, or it could be one of those ones like today where it's 400 plays 380 or whatever. So Pakistan favourites for me, but Sri Lanka gave it a good go today. They were sort of impressive, and as you say, they got it closer than I think Vavuma wanted to. I think he would have wanted his net run rate to have more of an injection than he did perhaps at the end, which sounds daft because they still won by 102 runs, which obviously you'd take. But yeah, they looked impressive.
Well, as I said at the start of the show, that was actually the second game today. Bangladesh and Afghanistan played earlier. And to talk about that, we're going to go over to Ben Gardner and Tawhid Qureshi.
Welcome to part two of today's Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. Bangladesh have got their campaign off to a weirdly fuss-free start. After the build-up was dominated by Tammy McBowell and Shakib's back injuries and backstabbing, they hardly put a foot wrong against Afghanistan, bowled them out for 156 and then easing to a 6-wicket win. I'm joined by Bangladesh cricket expert Tawhid Qureshi. Tawhid, did you see that coming?
I guess in some respects maybe, in other respects not. I mean, I actually thought it'd be a lot closer in terms of the way the game panned out. I was expecting more from Afghanistan. I thought they really did sort of capitulate in that batting innings of theirs, particularly when you look at where they were placed, 47 for none at one stage and also 112 for two. So yeah, from those sorts of positions to end up 156 all out really was quite disappointing from them. From a Bangladesh point of view, yeah, it all kind of seemed to go right. All the calls that were made by Shakib, I thought he kind of marshalled his troops, marshalled the bowlers pretty well, other than a bit of a wayward start up front from Tuskin and Shorafull. It all kind of seemed to go to plan, you know, once he brought himself on the seventh over. That's really kind of when the squeeze started. Got a couple of wickets courtesy of a couple of top edges, and yeah, he kind of does what we all know that he can do, essentially, you know, pick up wickets through that really sort of metronomical sort of style of bowling. You know, he's not a huge spinner of the ball. It's all about subtle changes of angle, release points, all those sorts of things. And actually, yeah, I thought the wicket that got Najibul Azad run out was kind of typical Shakib, barely sort of perceptible spin on the ball once it kind of pitched. But yeah, enough to bowl out the batter. So yeah, I think it all kind of went right for Bangladesh, really. And yeah, once those wickets started tumbling, it was kind of plain sailing from there. And yeah, as I say, with the bat, there was never really enough runs on the board for Afghanistan to kind of exert any real sort of pressure. That said, you know, there were certainly chances. I mean, Mehdi Hasan Miraz ended up with 57, but he was given a couple of lives. He was dropped on 17 and 23. I thought had they picked him up at that stage, they would have been in the game. But as it was, yeah, it was that third wicket partnership of 97 runs, really, with Shantu that really sort of took the game away.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Mehdi at the end there. I mean, he was the star of the show, really. Took three wickets and then hit a half century at number three. Using him in that top order is something Bangladesh kind of only just landed upon. He made a really good 100 opening, also against Afghanistan, actually, in the Asia Cup. I guess, I mean, from one point of view, what's the thinking behind promotion to begin with? But also kind of like, what's taken so long to try it? He looks really good up there.
He does, yeah. And I feel, you know, he's one of these players. So, you know, we know he can bat, or he has batted anywhere from like, and made runs anywhere from number one to number eight. So, you know, going back to that series against India, towards the end of last year, he made runs very low down the order. I guess, yes, they have actually promoted him up the order, particularly in sort of T20 cricket domestically. He's played a lot of cricket, a lot of his innings at the top of the order. I think it's something they've come upon almost by default. Obviously, the fact that they're kind of one opening batter short at the top with Tamim not in the squad also sort of has a bearing on that. But I think, yeah, for me, Miraz, he's such a versatile, flexible player. I think, though, the way that he's being used at the moment, it's almost like he's that sort of floater. He's being used as a bit of a stopgap to kind of plug a hole where it's needed. Whereas I think he's such a good player that actually whatever his place is, and essentially I think it should probably be either number four or number five, that, you know, his place should be cemented really. And, the top order should be kind of based around him. At the moment, it's slightly the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And I guess just encouraging for Bangladesh, Shakib's not young, and now they've got another kind of gun all-rounder who looks kind of set to establish himself. But Shakib was really good as well. I mean, took three wickets and three really important wickets, as you said. Afghanistan were 112 for two, but it was him that got those first two. So it would have been even worse if it weren't for him. And he capped him really well, as again, as you said, just made the changes at the right time. And I guess the quicks were actually good as well after that kind of start. They used the short ball a lot. Taskin Ahmed bowled quickly, and Shorafull, that probably bowled the ball of the day to Azmatullah Omarzai. And I just thought it was great to see Alan Donald, who's the Bangladesh fast bowling coach, sort of like smiling contently after each wicket, being like, this is what I want. But I guess that's quite a new thing for Bangladesh, isn't it? To have sort of like a stable of quicks, not just sort of like maybe one or two, but like a proper pace bowling attack. And that's encouraging as well, I suppose, looking forward in the tournament.
Well, it's their biggest strength, and it's their most exciting, potent kind of threat going into this tournament. So, yeah, I spoke to Alan Donald about a couple of weeks ago, just before the start of the competition. And he was saying, you know, one of the biggest changes that he's tried to instill, and I guess it's quite an obvious one, but, you know, trying to get the bowlers to kind of shelve that sort of fear of failure. I think he was saying previously, you know, they were obsessed about not getting hit for four or a six. So, you know, that was really kind of limiting their capabilities and their threat, if you like. But yeah, as you say, yeah, the fact that they've got, they've got five quick bowlers in this squad, and they all pose a slightly different threat, like you say. So yeah, Shorafull with a left arm angle. Really pleased actually to see the fierce Mustafiz Rahman sort of get into the game early. So he was brought in on in the six over. I think he bowled his seven overs straight through, and yeah, sort of picked up a wicket and really kind of stemmed the flow of runs at that stage as well. So yeah, they really have got an impressive sort of stable of fast bowlers to draw on, and yeah, that's certainly a new thing.
Yeah, I guess all that said, and as encouraging as it was for Bangladesh, Afghanistan were not great. They had that platform, and then there were loose shots. It wasn't just good Bangladesh bowling, although I guess that was partly the pressure being built. There were drop chances, there were misfields. I guess I thought the moment that summed up their game was the start of Mujeeb's innings, when he actually forgot his box on the way out to the middle, and he was just ready to face up, and they had to get a subfielder to run it on. And it was, I mean, you get a lot of things they say that that's village. And you know, any player can do a misfield, but this was properly village, like a guy forgetting a pretty important piece of equipment. But yeah, basically, something they just weren't ready. And I guess it's odd as well, because although they got knocked out in the first round of the Asia Cup, they kind of ended up on a high, didn't they? Almost beating Bangladesh to qualify for the Super Fours. Although they got the net run rate a bit wrong, but I guess hopefully they'll improve. But they they just seem to have a bit of a block at World Cups at the moment. We should touch on the build-up to this tournament for Bangladesh. Toy, give us as brief a recap as you can, and then your take on maybe the rights and wrongs and what it means for the team and for the campaign.
Sure. I mean, how long have you got? No, I'll try and keep it as brief as possible. So I guess, you know, going back to sort of the summer period, so Tommy McBall kind of resigned the captaincy, and that was in a bit of a fit of anger. Basically, the BCB president kind of called him out for not kind of being 100% fit, or basically Tamim's intention was to prove his fitness against a bilateral series against Afghanistan at home. The BCB president kind of called him out on that, said, you know, it's not the thing to do. So in a bit of a fit of rage, kind of Tamim resigned the captaincy. There was a big kind of hoo-ha around that. And in the end, he reversed that decision after a meeting with the Honourable Prime Minister and the former Bangladesh captain as well, Mashrafi Mortaza, who was talked out of that decision.
Yeah, he didn't just resign the captaincy, right? He actually retired from international cricket and then came back at that point, didn't he?
Exactly, yes. So at that point, that was it. I think, yeah, that was it. But then, you know, he's still been plagued with injury issues, principally his back. I know he was actually in London a few months ago for sort of treatment on his back. Going into the Asia Cup and the New Zealand series. He played a game against New Zealand, scored 40 odd. But after that game, I think he still felt there were sort of issues with his back. Anyway, cut long story short, so he has a conversation with the BCB who are sort of asking him, you know, what's the situation? He sort of says he's not 100%, but he feels that he will be ready for the start of the World Cup, i.e. today's game. BCB weren't so sure about that, so they make the suggestion for him to back down the order if he is going to play, at which point, again, Tamim basically kind of throws the toys out of the pram. He's not happy with that suggestion. He sort of says, well, I've played, you know, best part of 20 years at the top. You know, I don't know how to kind of back down the order, which, okay, yeah. Well, we'll come on to the to my take on it, I suppose. But yeah, it strikes you as a bit odd, I suppose. So yeah, at that point, he's obviously kind of left out of the World Cup squad. He then takes to Facebook to do like a 12-minute monologue kind of explaining what happens. There's lots of these theories around, you know, there was a late night meeting between Tamim and the BC president around the whole situation. So he tries to sort of clarify what's going on. But in doing so, I think he just kind of muddies the waters further. Basically, there was a suggestion that was put out to the media, or, you know, it was a rumour, basically, that Tamim's suggestion was that he could only play 5 to 6 games. But Tamim totally denies that. He says that he never kind of made that suggestion. And again, he just kind of reiterates the fact that he was asked to kind of bat down the order, at which point, you know, he kind of refused to do so. So, I guess fast forward, I think it was actually within 48 hours and only a day or two before they were due to leave India. So Shakib then gives a 30-minute interview to a Bangladesh channel called T Sports, which I guess is the equivalent of Sky Sports back here in the UK, where essentially he just twists the knife in. And without being explicit, I don't think he actually mentions Tamim by name specifically, although obviously the questioning is all around him. But he goes on to say generally that, you know, if you're a team man, a team player, you know, you should bat, you know, wherever the team needs you to bat, essentially. So yeah, I guess that's the long and short of it. I guess my take on it, as I was saying, yeah, I thought Tamim's you know, his 12-minute monologue, it was a bit strange. It was kind of there was quite a lot of self-pity in there, I felt. It was almost like he basically said, you know, he's been, or he has been, victimised over a number of months, which has kind of led him to this decision. And by victimised, I guess, you know, I think there's been lots of small issues that he's not been happy with. And, you know, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. But as I was saying, yeah, felt that there was quite a lot of self-pity there. And also, I think it was quite kind of in line with a player who's kind of really been kind of, I guess, kind of mollycoddled and basically given free rein throughout his whole career. You know, every whim of his has kind of been facilitated in some way by, you know, the cricket board and everyone around him. And it's important to note, you know, Tumin, in many respects, or his family, are kind of cricket royalty within Bangladesh. So his elder brother was a Bangladesh international as well, and he's also team manager leading up to the World Cup. And also his uncle played for Bangladesh at sort of the turn of the century, you know, just as they were coming to prominence. So, you know, he's very much been treated in that way. So again, yeah, the fact that it seems to be the first time that one of his requests, you know, one of his major requests has kind of been turned down, or things haven't exactly gone his way. I think, yeah, that's quite telling in that context. In terms of Shakib and his response, yeah, the one thing that struck me around that was just the whiff of hypocrisy, basically, because, you know, we all know Tumin's got a charge sheet longer than, you know, anyone else's. So, you know, he's got a whole history of, you know, throwing his toys out of the pram, you know, railing against umpiring decisions and the like. Also, you know, some of his off-field indiscretions, obviously the big one being banned for not reporting a approach by a bookmaker shortly after the 2019 World Cup. So, you know, he's got a litany of you know, charges against him. So for him then to sort of talk pretty much for 30 minutes about professionalism, about being a team person, really did kind of make me laugh at times. But, you know, we are where we are. And I think the one thing that I would be that I would say about Shakib, and I think, you know, today's performance encapsulates it perfectly, is that he's a sort of player that really does raise his game and intensity for the big occasion. Particularly, I think for him, World Cups really are the be all and end all. I've watched him playing a lot of bilaterals, particularly in test matches, where he often looks very disinterested. Also, actually, what you'll find is probably over the last couple of years, he really has kind of picked and chosen which kind of bilateral series that he actually wants to play in. Again, which is a little bit hypocritical when you're you know, criticising someone else essentially for doing the same thing. So, yeah, he's a sort of player who really does raise his game, you know, when the occasion demands it.
Yeah, I guess a bad back can make anyone a bit grouchy, can't it? But I guess we'll keep an eye on how that one develops, both during and I suppose after the World Cup, to see if Tamim does make a comeback or if that is the end for him. You also wanted to mention the conditions at Dharamsala. I guess we're still trying to get to grips with what we'll be faced with at different grounds, and this was another sort of unique set of conditions that the game was played in.
Yeah, I guess it. Yeah, obviously there's a big game on Tuesday, isn't there, between England and Bangladesh at the very same venue. Yeah, it was quite apparent kind of watching some of the fielders in the outfield trying to dive, but not being able to. You know, it's a sand-based outfield, and not only actually in the outfield, it's quite apparent when Tuskin, I've got Tumin on the brain, but yeah, when when Tuskin was bowling, you know, in the first innings there, lots of sand kind of kicking up around his heels as he was running into bowl. So, you know, you think that, you know, guys like Mark Wood, need to really I guess, keep an eye on that, because, you know, it's not the nicest thing to literally be running on sand when you're trying to kind of build up a head of steam. So, yeah, it's obviously something to keep an eye on. And I know there was something similar, wasn't there, in the first game at Ahmedabad, around, you know, big kind of divots in the outfield. Not the easiest kind of grounds to dive around in, I guess.
Will be a different challenge. And I guess also just Shakib will be used to the ground, good left-arm spinner, and England struggled against a good left-arm spinner in their first game with Mitch Santner, so will be another interesting game. Thanks, Torhid. I look forward to catching up with you again later in the competition. Now it's back to Katia and Jim to look ahead to tomorrow's India-Australia clash.
Jim, huge match tomorrow, India versus Australia. Bit of injury news from both camps, but we'll start with India. Shubman Gill has tested positive for dengue fever, which to me sounds really nasty, but both Rohit and Rahul Dravid have said he's not definitely ruled out of the game. So maybe it's not a bad dose.
I've had a dengue fever jab, I think, when I went travelling 10 years ago or whatever. And it sounds horrible, yeah. And I think if you get it bad, it's really bad. If it goes into full on, I think they just call it dengue, which sounds like, yeah, that's curtains. But the fever is like a flu thing. So, I mean, it could aches and pains and that sort of thing. So depending on how bad he's got it, maybe, he's so great to watch that you really want him to be playing in that. So hopefully he can get some Lemsip or whatever the equivalent for dengue fever is down him and play. But yeah, Australia also have some interesting injury news too.
Yeah, well, they've got a couple of bits of injury news. So Marcus Stoinis is apparently touch and go because he's got a hamstring niggle. But I know you're pretty keen to talk about Adam Zampa's injury, who apparently swam into the wall of a swimming pool at the team hotel a couple of days ago and cut his face. But apparently he's going to be okay to play, according to Pat Cummins today.
Pat Cummins also used the word apparently quite a lot, because I think he was pretty sceptical about what's been going on. But yeah, so Zampa was doing some underwater lengths of the pool at the hotel, I guess, and didn't have his goggles on. He bowls in those goggles. They look like goggles. They look like the sort of goggles you'd wear doing woodwork at school or whatever. I think you mentioned that, like, you know, when you're on the lathe and the teacher made you wear those sort of trendy spec things. But he wasn't wearing any in the swimming pool, swimming underwater with his eyes closed and just full on smashed into the end of the pool, and is sort of made a bit of a mess of his face. But obviously his fingers and hands and everything are fine. I think he's just probably a little bit embarrassed, if that is what happened. Apparently Pat Cummins was saying that was what has happened. He's crucial, right? Because Australia's spin, they don't have that many spinners. They have him and Maxwell, so they really need him to be firing on all cylinders. But really excited for it feels like the World Cup will properly come alive tomorrow with India and Australia. I know there's been a bit of chat about the stadiums being empty and then filling up, and it was a great game today. But I think tomorrow will be the sort of opening match de facto. But the last two sides to play as well, aren't they? So everyone else has had a crack. So it's all been building to this India Australia match. So yeah, can't wait.
Exactly. It'll be the first chance we get to see of Mitchell Starc in this tournament after he's been leading wicket taker in the last two. Who would you rather have in your bowling attack, Mitchell Starc or Jasprit Bumrah?
I'm going to go Bumrah. I think Bumrah obviously is coming back from injury, but he just has it all. In the last magazine, in fact, we spoke to Chris Wokes and he said Bumrah's the best. You know, he's got everything. He's got the toe-breaking Yorker. He's got the short ball. He's got variations. He's got pace. He's got a weird action. You can see as a batsman that you'd much rather face, well, you wouldn't much rather face either of them, but you might be able to line Starc up a little bit better because of his smoother action and that sort of stuff. Whereas Bumrah, it's like, well, what's coming, like a bag of snakes coming down at you. So, really exciting, but I'd probably just go for Bumrah.
And lastly, what's your prediction? Who's going to win tomorrow?
It's going to be India, isn't it? It's going to set the tournament alight. They're going to get loads of runs, get loads of wickets. Someone will, you know, Kohli or Sharma will light up the place and it'll be pretty amazing. So yeah, I think India will get us all off our seats tomorrow.
Well, that's all from us today. There'll be another daily pod tomorrow after the India-Australia game. Thanks for your time, Jim, and Ben and Abhishek Mukherjee will be back with you tomorrow.
Social Podcast Network.